Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, happy new league year to you.
It's a happier new league year to a bunch of free agents that made a ton of money.
Yeah, there was a lot of money flying around. More money in the NFL than ever before. $167 million, the salary cap, and teams were spending like crazy. Thursday night opened, as has been the case for the last couple of years, Jeff, not just free agent signings, but real drama. You know, a couple of years ago, we had the Jimmy Graham trade to Seattle. Last year, we had Brock Osweiler walking out on the Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. And this year, let's start right there with Brock Osweiler again, because he's traded from Houston to Cleveland in what is now clearly a buying of the second round draft pick. So Cleveland gave up a fourth round pick to get Osweiler and his $16 million contract. The Houston Texans basically wanted Osweiler off the books, clears up about $10 million of salary cap space for them, but they have to give up a second round draft pick in 2018 to persuade the Browns to take him. This is something that maybe the NFL are going to look closely at, Jeff, as it goes forward, because this was a clear trade purely to get a draft pick, wasn't it?
Well, I think so, and you know, I think that trade may, I don't know if revolutionize is too strong a word, Neil, but I think it's a new way of looking at doing your business in the National Football League. And you can say what you want about Flashy Brown and the, you know, the money ball tactics that they've brought to Cleveland, but I think it's really a kind of an eye-opener now, because you look at the Texans had a situation that they had to get out of. I mean, the Osweiler deal was just a bad deal all the way around. He didn't perform. They paid way too much money to get him. It was guaranteed money. So they were desperate and needed to clear that cap space. And in the end, Cleveland took advantage of it and got themselves – basically, everybody talks about they bought a second-round pick, but, you know, with where they were in the cap, you know, it's a tremendous deal, because you had to use the cap room anyway. So basically, you buy that second-round pick for, I think, it was $16 million, and it's a new way of doing business, I think, in the league.
Yeah, Cleveland have to spend, or all teams have to spend, to 89% of the salary cap this year. So there was pressure with the Browns having $102 million of salary cap space. Jeff, let's look at this from both sides. So we'll talk about Houston in a second. But Cleveland are clearly adopting this money ball approach. So they're going to have 10 picks in the 2017 draft. Two number ones, two number twos, a three, a four, three number fives, and a round six. In 2018 now, they've got a first-round pick, three second-round picks, a third rounder, two fourth rounders, a fifth, two sixths, and a seventh. They'll have 11 picks in 2018. This still, to me, Jeff, $16 million for a pick next year that will range between 33 and 64. I mean, time will tell, because maybe they try and parlay this into a trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. That was the word on the street when Jimmy took to Instagram, and then later we realized that his account had been hacked and it was a hoax. We thought he was on his way out of New England and perhaps heading to Cleveland. Unless they parlay that pick into something that resembles a franchise quarterback, for me, it's a little bit too rich. But what you seem to quite like the outside-the-box thinking?
I kind of like it, because I think it's, as you say, it's out-of-the-box thinking. They needed to spend the money anyway. So you have the choice of spending it on overpaying for a free agent, which they are going to have to do to bring free agents in there. Now, they improved. I thought Cleveland had a good free agency period.
I agree.
Because they particularly improved that offensive line. Now, you know, let's say it's a Terrell Pryor, or, you know, to pay him to stay, you're going to have to overpay him. Or to go out and get another player, you're going to overpay. So if this, now this is, again, the key thing, if, and this is in every trade and every free agency deal, and you know this, it's, we'll make the we'll give the grade in about 2 years. You're not going to be able to do it right now because you just don't know how these things are going to pan out. But what I think they've done a great job of is they've accumulated assets. Now, you can use those assets and those draft picks as assets in any way, shape, or form you choose to. You look at the draft. You know what your needs are. The number one thing for them, obviously, is quarterback. So they've put themselves in a position, whether it's Garoppolo or somebody else along the way, they've put themselves in a position where they have assets to trade to access a quarterback. So in my opinion, you know, again, draft pick, if they choose to go that way, yes. Assets, if they choose to use them as a way to unlock a quarterback, yes. I think they've done, they put themselves in the best possible position that they can.
Jeff, you are in the locker rooms of pro football teams, so I want to ask you this because if I'm a Browns fan, I'm a little bit worried about the message it sends, though, and I understand the Moneyball approach, and it's a very analytical approach, but I don't know if players want to feel like they're playing for a computer spreadsheet. I think there has to be a human element to this. And Terrell Pryor last year, Jeff, he said that he wanted, he made some ill-advised comments, but he was like, I'm willing to die on the field for the Cleveland Browns. And by all accounts, he was asking for too much money, and that's why the team parted ways with him. I wonder if they ponied up the extra $2 or $3 million per year for Terrell Pryor, which would have broken their analytical approach, whether that would have resounded more with the locker room. Just, do you get what I'm saying? Because there's obviously there's a formula that they have, but they've just bought a second round pick for $16 million, but they wouldn't give a few million extra to a guy who gave his all last year on the field in Terrell Pryor.
See, I don't buy that, right? And I'm going to tell you something. Let me ask you right now, okay, where is Terrell Pryor? He isn't dead in Cleveland. He isn't dying in Cleveland. He's somewhere else where he got more money. The bottom line is the bottom line. The players can say anything they choose to say. Mm. And he's smart enough to say the right things in the media in Cleveland, right? Because what is Cleveland? You know, you negotiate through the media, which is what he was doing, Neil.
Yeah.
When you do that, then you're gonna run the risk of alienating the other side, the side that you're negotiating against. And I'm talking about that's for the team and for the player. Mm. So when he comes out and makes these statements like "I'll die on the field for the Cleveland Browns," yeah, that's all good. Now, put your money where your mouth is. $3 million, you're making whatever, I mean, whatever they offered.
They offered him 10, I think, it's 10 a year, than, yeah.
Well, that's more than enough money for a guy who's a one-year player, really is what he is.
Yes, he was.
He's a one-year player. So, but all of a sudden that changed when $3 million more dollars got waved in front of you. So, yeah, I hear all that stuff, right? But the bottom line is the bottom line. If you really wanted to be in Cleveland, you'd be in Cleveland.
And Jeff, what are the Browns... Sorry, go on.
Pardon me?
No, you go on.
You know, I put more stock in what a pro like Joe Thomas, who's been a multi-year Pro Bowl player, and, you know, one of those guys that went... I mean, he's got the pedigree. Terrell Pryor is a one-year player, right? When the guy who has the pedigree and has been there through all of it likes the way the team's going, that says more to me than some guy who pops off and makes a statement and then bolts out of town for $3 million more.
And the Browns, he actually ended up not getting, he didn't end up getting much more because I think he misplayed the market and Washington signed Terrell Pryor to a one-year deal. But where the Browns did make improvements, Jeff, kind of is reflected around the NFL. It wasn't a great market for wide receivers, so maybe that's why they didn't overpay for Pryor. But offensive linemen were being paid big, and the Browns upgraded there. They re-signed Joel Bitonio. They've already got Joe Thomas. They added Kevin Zeitler at guard and J.C. Tretter at center. They also added Kenny Britt at wide receiver to kind of offset the Terrell Pryor stuff. But right now, when you look at the Cleveland Browns and you look at that offensive line, and in a moment we'll talk about how the offensive line market kind of went nuts and... You know, it was a reflection, I guess, of teams that struggled with offensive line play last year. But the Browns helped themselves in a real area of need there.
I agree with you. You know, I think that was probably one of the most, other than what New England was able to do in free agency, I think what the Browns did with their offensive line was one of the most impressive free agency efforts. Now, albeit, you know, I say that, and they had the most money to spend. So, you know, they had the ability to go out and get those guys. But you look at it, you re-signed Betonio. You know, you got Joe Thomas at left tackle. You bring in J.C. Treader, who, you know, again, doesn't have a big body of work. If he can stay healthy, that's the biggest thing with J.C. Treader. He's always been, he's been nicked up in with the Packers, just at a time when you think he's going to take, you know, take over and run with it. But he's certainly an upgraded center because that was the biggest hole in the offensive line. You know, I just really think that, you know, the game doesn't change. It all starts in the offensive line now. Again, until Cleveland can find that quarterback, it's going to be a work in progress. I'm not a big Kenny Britt fan. I think he's a little too inconsistent for me, but you're going to overpay for a receiver. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And you're right, Neil. If you're an offensive lineman in free agency this year, this was your year because you see the money that guys were getting. And not what you would call Pro Bowl-level guys are getting huge contracts.
Yeah, it's supply
and demand economics.
Yeah, let's just go through a couple of those, Jeff. So the Minnesota Vikings gave Riley Reiff a five-year, $58 million deal. There was 26 of that guaranteed. I mean, we've got to remember as well, not all of this is guaranteed. A four-year, $24 million deal could easily become a two-year, $12 million deal with a lot of how the teams build stuff in with guarantees. Torrey Smith is a good example. His last contract with the San Francisco 49ers was a $40 million deal. He only made $16 million of that before he hit free agency again, and now he's with the Philadelphia Eagles. But Mike Remmers, we've talked about some of the problems he had. He signed a five-year, $30 million deal with the Vikings. Andrew Whitworth got a big deal from the LA Rams, and he's like, what, 34, 35 years old. Russell Okung, 4 years, $53 million from the Chargers. Ricky Wagner is a very good right tackle, but he gets nearly $30 million in guarantees. 5 years, $47.5 million with the Lions. Oh, I mean, Menelik Watson even, you know, Raiders, from the Raiders to the Broncos. 3 years, $18 million. I mean, Jeff, we could go on and on. The offensive line market went crazy, and it's because you've got to have one.
Yeah, and you know, you look at even a guy that we love as much as we love Kelvin Beach, and you look at what the Jets had to pay to get him. And yeah. You look at it, and when it was going on, you know, and I'm following you on Twitter and you're blogging and I'm watching these deals come down, and I'm just saying to myself, pounding in my brain is Bill Polian's comment about the draft that you never use first round draft picks on guys that don't touch the ball. I'm thinking to myself, well, if you don't, then in free agency you're going to pay a lot of money because, like you said, Andrew Whitworth is 35 years old.
Yeah.
And you're a building team in the Rams. And what are you going to get? Maybe two more years out of him. But that's just how few of those guys there are.
Detroit were one of those teams, Jeff, who tried to upgrade the offensive line. They get Ricky Wagner, as I said, from Baltimore. And the big fish for them was TJ Lang, the Pro Bowl guard from the Green Bay Packers. That was, Bob Quinn's made a couple of significant upgrades there to a team that seems to have some good skill position players. But again, Matthew Stafford was getting hit too much.
Yeah, well, again, you're right. And that's why the game has changed so much, because maybe back in the days when Polian was doing his magic at Buffalo and Indianapolis, you know, it was a different game. You know, there weren't these tremendous pass rushers on everybody's team. And, you know, you got to protect those guys. I think with the Lions, I think Quinn has done a really interesting, you know, low-key approach, but really interesting approach to building that football team. And I'm anxious to see. And the Packers, you know, we knew that Teddy was going to he's not a big mover and shaker in free agency. Them bringing in Martellus Bennett, but yet losing two critical offensive linemen in Treader and TJ Lang, that's tough. You know, it's hard to lose two frontline players on the offensive line. And you know, what message does that send Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers lost. He openly campaigned for how much he liked Jared Cook at the back end of last year as well. And they made no effort to re-sign Cook, but they did sign Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks, who'd been released by the Rams. But the Packers lost Micah Hyde as well. Julius Peppers went back to Carolina. And importantly, two interior linemen, JC Tretter and TJ Lang. Jeff, you mentioned me live blogging. Boy, was that an adventure. So, you know, I'm pretty much like you. I don't want to maybe cast you with the same brush, but I'm not very sort of technologically savvy when it comes to using laptops and computers.
And boy, that's a nice way to say that.
Yeah, I would have rather done it with a typewriter. Anyway, so I had to borrow our producer from Sky Sports. I had to borrow his laptop, remotely log into the Sky Sports system, then get into the content management system of the live blogging on the website. And then basically I had the keys to the kingdom. I could write everything I wanted. And I was having a nightmare. I mean, free agency had opened. I couldn't work out quite how to use the content management system. Then I pressed, something happened. I pressed a couple of buttons and I don't know what happened, but the cursor wouldn't move. So I don't know what happened. I'd locked it somehow. So I'm running around my house trying to find a mouse that I can plug into this laptop while my text is going off from the producer saying, have you seen that the Browns have traded for Brock Osweiler? I'm literally just like, I know. And I'm running from room to room trying to find this mouse. And it was the most stressful and most fun. And I do think, you know, I think we all think that there should be that we should have an opening night of free agency program on Sky Sports. So let's keep our fingers crossed on that.
I'm telling you, the reason but just the response that you got, I'm sure, and that I got on Twitter, that is such an amazing night. And really, you could do 2 days because the second day was almost good. And, you know, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in your house and told you. George and Poppy were watching.
My wife's just sitting there shaking her head, and I'm ringing the producer and saying, "How do I do this? How do I do that?" And I think I realized I might have a little bit of attention deficit disorder because he'd shown me everything how I was supposed to use it during the day, and I forgot a lot of it. Let's talk about the New England Patriots. You mentioned them just there, Jeff, because, I mean, just hats off to the Patriots. People can play, I'm bored of seeing the Patriots win the Super Bowl and be so successful. This team is not resting on its laurels. In fact, Jeff, it looks like they're going all in. It's almost like they feel they're coming to the end of Belichick and Brady, and they're really loading up the cannon.
Hey, imagine what were these quotes? We're 5 weeks behind.
Not anymore.
5 weeks behind. Imagine what it'd be like if he was even with everybody. I mean, it's incredible. They're incredible. Now, granted, it's a destination spot now because everybody, you know, you're Stephon Gilmore. You've been in Buffalo long enough to see handwriting on the wall. It's going to be really tough for you to ever win a Super Bowl in Buffalo. But I'm not knocking the Bills. I'm just saying that's the reality of a number of teams in the National Football League. So you're a veteran player, a guy who's at the peak of his career. You want to stand underneath that confetti. You got a much better chance of seeing that happening if you go to New England. And doggone it, you know, if they don't just they improve in areas where they have to improve, right? You go get Stephon Gilmore, who's a top line corner, not because they knew that they had guys they needed to sign back there. You go out and you improve an already nasty offense with the one thing you don't have. His vertical speed and big play ability, and you go out and get Brandon Cooks. And I mean, tell you now, it was evident by the reaction of Drew Brees how big a part of that offense that he is, and what he can bring to New England, which they've really kind of never had, is that guy that's vertical. I mean, look at that kid's numbers in his years in the National Football League, what he's been able to accomplish. And, you know, it's just like they just keep getting better. I think the Coney Ealy deal is the one that's going to be the key one in this, because you know Gilmore's going to play and you know Cooks is going to make his plays. Now, if they can get out of Coney Ealy what he's flashed in his time at Carolina, and I know he didn't have a great year last year, but remember back to the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
If Carolina wins that game, he's probably the MVP of the Super Bowl.
Well, let's put a bit of flesh on the bones with some of these deals then. And Coney Ealy, let's start. He can basically be a younger, more athletic Chris Long, who came in and did a one-year job for the Patriots last year. As Jeff said, Ealy had just 5 sacks all of last year. But all New England had to do was slide down 8 spots in the draft. They get an early third-round pick from the Panthers, and they give up a second-round pick. So this is the thing, Jeff, with the Patriots here. Let's look at Dwayne Allen, probably deemed surplus to requirements in Indianapolis. Now they re-signed Jack Doyle. So the Patriots are scouring around, and they see an unsettled player there in Dwayne Allen. They see Brandon Cooks last year complaining that he doesn't get the ball enough from the New Orleans Saints. That problem will go away in New England. You don't see that kind of locker room dissent in New England. And then you've got a 23-year-old tied for the NFL lead, 6 passes of 40 yards or longer last year. There are only 3 players in the past 2 seasons who've recorded 75 catches, 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. Cooks is one of them. The other two are Odell Beckham Jr. and Antonio Brown. It cost New England a first-round pick and a third-round pick, but they get back from the Saints a 4th-round pick, which they have to give up because of their Deflategate punishment. So that doesn't hurt the Patriots there, because they've gained a 4th-round pick in that part of the deal. And you look at Coney Ealy, again, young player, point to prove, maybe a bit disgruntled. It's like they prey on the weaknesses and frailties of the other 31 teams, Jeff. And even when they give something up in a trade, it feels like they win every time. It's like somebody put on Twitter, and I wish I'd grabbed their name, because it was a great quote from one of my followers on Twitter, who said it's like the Patriots are playing Madden and they've got it set on Bill mode.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna tell you something. Think about that first round pick, right? Where is the Patriots' first round pick located?
32nd.
It's way down in the first round, right? So if you said to any one of the GMs in the National Football League that I can get you Brandon Cooks for a first rounder, you got to take that deal. Mm. Because you can talk about all these guys in the draft, right? Like, you know, the kid from Washington that runs 4.2, and, you know, the kid from Western Michigan that looks great on tape. But you know what? They've never done it in pro football.
Right.
And it is a big step. It's a big jump. And there's no guarantee that 4.2, 5 or 9 or whatever that 40 was is going to translate to the National Football League. There's no guarantee that kid from Western Michigan, who was making all those great plays against Miami of Ohio and Toledo and Northern Illinois, is going to do the same things against the Miami Dolphins and, you know, the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, it just doesn't work that way. So you got a guy who's been there, done that, and is now coming into the peak of his career. He's only been in the league 3 years. So it's not like you're getting an old guy that you're just trying to hang, you know, like when they got Randy Moss and you knew what you were getting declining skill. This is a guy that is at the peak of his career, and you get him for a first-round pick.
And, Jeff,
I mean, I think it's a stealing.
Do you know how much you get him for as a salary as well, because he's on his rookie contract still? They will pay Brandon Cooks, if he turns out to be a one-year rental in 2017 and it doesn't pan out, they will pay him a total of $1.56 million. And then they have the chance to pick up his 5th-year option, or he becomes a free agent. I mean, you could almost be saying, well, we're going all in for 1 year. We're going to give Tom Brady this guy, like they had Randy Moss in 2007. And away you go. It's going to cost us $1.5 million. I mean, it's very, very clever the way they do business.
Let me just say this. Terrell Pryor got how much money?
It was about 10, I think. I need to check that. But yeah,
$10 million. You get Brandon Cooks for $1 million. You get a guy who's done what against a guy who's done what?
Right. Yeah. Right.
How much did Kenny Britt? How much did Kenny Britt make?
$8 million.
You just do the math. Yeah, you do the math. It's ridiculous how good a deal that is.
Alshon Jeffery's $14 million for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, think about that, Neil. That's $13 million difference in your cap. I mean, come on now. It's almost like we have a saying, the cat that ate the canary. You know what I'm saying? And he's got that kind of wry smile on his face as he's spitting out feathers. I mean, that's what Belichick is.
And you can almost, like, Jeff, I can almost imagine the rest of the league dreading when that phone call comes and they see the New England area code, because they're like, oh no, we're going to get something out of it, but we're not going to get fully what we want. And also it means we're not going to win the Super Bowl. I mean, you think the rest of them would just not deal with them. They can't help themselves.
You know what? Exactly. It's just, you know, they are incredible. And I didn't even mention the Allen deal, right? Because here's a guy that is one of the better blocking tight ends in the league. Mm. And, you know, he's not going to New England to catch a ton of passes. He's going there to be the second tight end to Gronk. And, you know, he'll be a better blocker than Martellus was. You know, and I like Martellus Bennett, but that's not the strength of Martellus Bennett's blocking. Now you add a vertical receiver and a guy that can, you know, block a tight end. And what have you done in terms of shrinking your cap? Or, you know, I mean, they're all really shrewd deals. And like you said about Ely, even though Ely had 5 sacks last year, how many did Long have, right?
About the same,
and
yes.
And you talk about guys at different points in their career. Here's a young, talented pass rusher who, for whatever reason, didn't perform at a high level last year at the expectation level. I think maybe that expectation level for all of the guys in Carolina was inflated because of their Super Bowl run. Mm. But who else? Did anybody else in Carolina play at a high level? No, I mean, he was part of a team that just didn't play well. Mm. Put him in that new environment, get him with Matt Patricia in that locker room, and then take those skills and let's see what you got.
Well, we've got a situation where the best got even better, I think, over free agency. Coming up still on Inside the Huddle, we're going to talk about the Washington Redskins seemingly in disarray. We'll talk about Tony Romo. It looked like he was going to be released, and then he wasn't. Some veteran talent is still on the market. Adrian Peterson, Jamal Charles, Jay Cutler, Darrell Revis. As Jeff always says, we all love the game, but the game doesn't love us, and we'll be seeing what happens with those guys. We'll be back with our state of the franchise next week, but we're going to stick to free agency chat for this week. And Jeff, let's talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, because it was a defense that was ranked 6th in the NFL last year, and they've added some pieces again. And I know we've said this, it's stopped me if you've heard it before, but the Jags are winning the offseason. But Calais Campbell, he's going to turn 31 before the season kickoff, but he's been given a 4-year, $60 million deal. A.J. Boye, the cornerback from the Houston Texans, 5 years, $67.5 million. And Barry Church at safety is going to get about $6 million a year. But I actually love the Campbell deal, Jeff, because I think he's a locker room leader as well. And they've got some direction now, the Jags. They seem to have this kind of clear plan in place, and it's starting with Tom Coughlin right at the very top.
And you know what, Neil? I agree with you on the Campbell deal, because if you're going to overpay, and you always overpay in free agency, that's just the way it is. But if you're going to overpay, overpay for a good guy. Overpay for an effort guy. Overpay for a locker room leader. Don't overpay for a guy that bitches and moans all the time. So Calais Campbell, the thing that has defined his career so far is that he's a great locker room guy. He's a great teammate. He's a great leader. He'll give you great effort. He'll play nicked up. All of the things that Coughlin and Marone want in this football team. You hear Coughlin say, we need to play with more grit. What did he do? He went out and got guys with grit. O.J. Boye, the corner, who undrafted guy who had to work and scratch and claw and made himself into one of the top corners in the league. So you go out and get him. I like the move that Jacksonville made. Let's be honest, Neil. As far down as the Jags were, they have to win a couple of off seasons before they start winning on the field in the season, because that roster was so depleted.
And, Jeff, I guess that clears, when you can attack one side of the ball like they have done in free agency, it can give them a very clear plan going into the draft, because their 22nd ranked offense last year in the NFL, I think we all agree they still need some offensive line help, and perhaps a running back as well. So once you attack and you kind of tick some boxes in free agency, you know, they can really focus on one side of the ball if they have to. I mean, they can still draft defensive players, of course. But when you look at Jacksonville, it's offensive line and running back to me that are the kind of finishing parts.
Yeah, I don't want to get big into the draft stuff, but no. You're right. You're exactly right, Neil, because when you look at this, you say there's a billion running backs. There's going to be a running back for you, right? And there's probably going to be a running back as late as three for you. But if you look at tackle, there's some good tackle. This is where they need, in my opinion, where they need up in the offensive line more than any place else to tackle. And you look at there's some young tackles in this draft that are physically nasty. Mm. I mean, nasty. And that's what they need. They need those kinds of guys. And you know Doug from your days of interviewing him way back with, I think they actually were called the Nasty Boys, weren't they?
They were. The Monarchs. They were. That's right. Yeah, that's what he was.
And so he's going to bring that nasty to the offensive line. I watched him do it here in Buffalo when he was the head coach of the Bills. That's his reputation. Mm. So whether it's the big kid from Wisconsin or the kid from Utah, there's some really tough, physical, you know, kind of guys in this draft, which I think that's probably what they're going to target with the you know, first pick.
Jeff, let's talk about a couple of other teams and issues. You just mentioned there's young running backs in the draft, and maybe that's affecting the free agent market for running backs. Now, of course, this is always very dangerous recording these kind of podcasts such a busy time of the year, because this could get dated very quickly if Adrian Peterson or Jamaal Charles sign contracts. But, Jeff, some veteran talent early on in free agency, it was nothing but crickets and tumbleweeds. Adrian Peterson has since visited the Seattle Seahawks, but there's been no real interest in Peterson, in Jamaal Charles. And actually, you can stretch that out past the running back position and look at Jay Cutler, Darrell Revis. There's been no kicking of the tires of Colin Kaepernick. Robert Griffin III got cut by the Cleveland Browns. It doesn't matter how famous your name is. If you can't produce, or you're not going to give a team value, it doesn't mean anything, does it? This period of time is no respecter of reputation or legacy.
No, it isn't. And you know what? In some ways, it's kind of, you know, you see a player that's going to be a Hall of Fame player in Adrian Peterson, and he's trying to find a team to play for now at the end of his career. And, you know, maybe there's a lesson in that. Maybe he needs to think of the way DeMarcus Ware went out this week. Mm. You know, here's a guy who probably could have hung on. I'm sure he had offers to go and be a situational pass rusher a few places. I'm sure Wade probably would have taken him to the Rams as much as he thinks of him. But you know what? He decided it was time for him to walk away from it. And, you know, it's always sad. And we think about guys like Johnny Unitas. We think about guys like Joe Namath. We think about guys who maybe played, hung on too long. And those are really sad ways to see superstars go out. But, you know, again, it's sometimes the hardest thing to say is, I've had enough.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes guys go out like Peyton Manning on their own terms, but for every one of them, there's a dozen Emmitt Smiths who was just a shadow of his former self in Arizona. Jeff, maybe there's going to come a price and a period of time, and this can happen to great players. Like you said, Charles Woodson told me a couple of years ago how humbling it was to sit in free agency for about a week before he got signed by the Raiders, and it really made him think about retirement, and then he went on to be good for the Raiders for another couple of years. But Adrian Peterson was due to make $18 million this year. Of course, the Vikings were never going to pick up that part of the contract. You got to wonder, is he going to play for $1 million, $2 million, or is he thinking in his head, anything under five and I'm not going to play, I'm going to retire? And it's interesting with him, Jeff, because I've said this a couple of times on Twitter. This is a genuine superstar. This is a guy who has been allowed to march to the beat of his own drum. You don't want to take part in practice. You don't have to. You don't want to play in the preseason. You don't have to. Practice starts at 3 o'clock. Come on the field at 3:45. I mean, it's going to be difficult for him to fit into another team anyway.
Yeah, and you know, then you top that all off with, this is a, quote, undervalued position. Mm. you know, if there's so many young guys out there. There's so many good young players at that position, and you know, you get a guy like, let's use any of the great young running backs right now in the league, right, that have come in, and you look at, you're getting that for a rookie contract, and you're going to pay $18 million for a guy that is at the end of his career, can't play full seasons, can't practice all week. You're getting all, when you take an Adrian Peterson or any of those veteran guys, even Jamal Charles, who's been hurt, Eddie Lacy, who's got weight issues, you're taking on all of those problems along with it. And, you know, so it's just a tough position to get old at, because there's so many good young ones coming out. I mean, you look at the draft, that running back.
Yeah, I mean,
that running back class is impressive.
Yeah, you're right, Jeff. And, I mean, if you take the names off the jerseys and you just give them a blank jersey each and you tell me that this one's going to earn $18 million and this one's going to earn $1 million, and one of them's Adrian Peterson and one of them's Jordan Howard from the Bears, who didn't cost me much in draft picks either, you're going to take the younger guy, because, I mean, this is just a reality of the business. And I think that's why, you know, we're seeing a number of these players sit and not get picked up. Are you surprised that Cutler's not really had a lot of interest, Jeff? I mean, there's a lot of talk about his personality, but he's suddenly become Jeff George. He's suddenly become poison.
You know what? That's a really, really good analogy. That's a really good comparison, because, you know, June Jones told me, and now here's a guy that played in the National Football League, coached in the National Football League for a number of years, head coach two places in the NFL. So he's seen them all. And he was there during, you know, he played, you know, before Marino and coached after Marino. So he's seen a bunch of them, all of them, Peyton Manning, all of them. And he said to me that there has been nobody who had the physical skill set that Jeff George had. And he couldn't find a team where that skill set got unlocked. You know, it didn't happen in Indianapolis. It didn't happen in Atlanta. It didn't happen in Oakland. It didn't happen any of the places he played. And who does that sound like we're talking about?
In such a hungry league, yeah, such a quarterback-hungry league. It is Jay Cutler at the moment.
Because everybody, Neil, when you look at his skill set, you take, let's say you didn't know anything about his personality, never watched it, but you just evaluated the player's skill set, you'd say that's a franchise quarterback right there. He'd make all the throws, you know, got all the physical ability you could want, but for, I mean, how many head coaches has he got fired? I mean, that's just the reality of it.
You're right. Jeff, let's talk about a little bit of firing and some disarray, really, around the Washington Redskins. They've fired general manager Scott McLuhan. Looks like, for now, Bruce Allen is going to take control of the reins again. Don't forget, Bruce Allen is the guy who gave up all of those picks to get Robert Griffin III. I mean, what a weekend for the Washington Redskins, Jeffrey. I felt like they were a team that were exciting to watch again. They were on the rise. They weren't quite there, but they were back in the mix and they were relevant. And Scott McLuhan has been fired, and the Redskins have slung quite a bit of mud in his direction as he's gone out of the door. You know, reports of him being drunk in the locker room and all of that kind of stuff resurfacing. Then they lose Pierre Garçon to the 49ers. DeSean Jackson at wide receiver goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Chris Baker, who was a key defensive lineman for them, also joins the Buccaneers, and we get these reports that Kirk Cousins wants to demand a trade. Eventually, Kirk has signed his franchise tag and says he will play for the Redskins in 2017. I don't know if that whole trade-in of Kirk Cousins to the San Francisco 49ers is dead, but I do know that this is a team that had so much feel-good around it that has just thrown it all down the tubes.
Wow. Yeah. Just, do you remember when the movie Jaws was a big deal?
Yes. Right?
And then they brought out Jaws 2.
Yep.
And the teaser line that they used when they brought out Jaws 2 was, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. Right? That's exactly the way you look at these guys. Just when you thought the dysfunction was over, here we go. I mean, what in the heck? So, I mean, first of all, why do you got to beat up Scott McLuhan?
Yeah.
I mean, you can, there's a million ways to move on from a guy, right? And they choose to get down in the mud and sling mud, right? Then you got the quarterback going to the owner saying, please trade me. And as he watches his great receivers going out the door.
And Jeff, let me just say on that, because obviously I've worked with Kirk a number of years and a number of different events over here in the UK. When you're trying to build a team, I truly 100% believe he is one of those guys where you say, pay that guy. He's not a malcontent. He's not a troublemaker. He's not. In fact, I think his good nature is probably why he signed the franchise tag and is determined to be a good soldier as long as he can be. But what a state to be in if that guy is then knocking on the owner's door and demanding to get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks all the wrong things. And again, I'm not bashing the Redskins. I'm just telling you, look at the history, right? Here we go again. Now, the one positive thing I thought was that they re-signed Jay. And that's, I think, the first, correct me on this, Neil, if I'm wrong, but I think that's the first coach in the Snyder era to ever get to an extension or a second contract.
Second contract, that's correct.
And if that's the case, that says a volume right there about the stability inside the organization. Mm. And, you know, like I said, there are organizations that habitually are going to have drama around them, and the Redskins seem to be one of those teams.
Jeff, let's talk about Tony Romo. This is a big story, of course, and looked like it was going to be one of those things that got dealt with early in the opening of the new league year. We heard the day before the opening of the league year that the Cowboys were going to release Tony Romo. Then free agency began, and Romo posts on his social media accounts was pretty much a goodbye to Dallas fans, and you know, we'll thank you for all your support, all of that. And I thought, well, the next logical thing is we're going to see him turn up in Houston or in Denver. That release hasn't come yet, and I don't know if Jerry's hanging on to see if Houston are willing to trade for Tony Romo, or if the Broncos are willing to trade for Tony Romo. We know that Houston have now cleared some salary cap space, and that move is now possible for them. But there's this kind of strange limbo. And one extra little quirky thing that was thrown into the mix was news that Fox were interested in making Tony Romo one of their color commentators for 2017. So, you know, is Romo going to Houston? Is he going to Denver? Is he going to go to the television booth? I mean, I guess Jerry is just trying to hold on to see if he can get some trade value, but it looked like at first he was going to release him.
Well, I think it's really interesting that the timing of his, you know, videotape address to the fans and goodbye to the fans, and then they don't, like you say, they don't release him. And so obviously Jerry Jones and the Cowboys are trying, which I think is smart, they're trying to get value for the player, right? Now, they're going to have to release him. I don't see there's any way around it with their salary cap and some of the other things that they're faced with. Yeah. But by keeping him on the books, you know, the Cowboys, there's been some, I think, knock on to this. You know, when you look at what happened with the Cowboys in free agency, they have not had a great free agency period.
No.
And they've had Doug Free retire. And now, I mean, there's been an exodus of players out of Dallas because they're so up against the cap.
Jeff, I was just going to list those. So let me just list those, because I was going to do that as part of the conversation about the Cowboys. But the Ronald Leary, the guard, has gone. Doug Free has retired, offensive tackle. They lost safeties Barry Church and J.J. Wilcox. They lost defensive tackles Jack Crawford, Britain's own, who's gone to the Atlanta Falcons, and Terrell McClain. This is the Cowboys were in the worst salary cap state of any team. So whereas you could point the finger at Green Bay, who let all of their guys walk when they had $40 million to spend, Dallas didn't have that money to spend, but it's players going in the wrong direction for a team that's not far away. And now we've got this Romo situation.
Yeah, and I mean, the reality of it is you got to look at your division first, right? And you look at what the Giants have done, and you got to say, well, the Giants have upgraded because they keep Jason Pierre-Paul. They go out and get Brandon Marshall. I think you know, the Eagles have obviously gotten better.
Yes.
You know, with them finally getting a receiver that, you know, on a one-year deal, I'm sure Alshon Jeffrey will have a great year because it's a one-year deal. It's a prove-it deal. But the Cowboys haven't done that now. So I look at this one. This is where I think, you know, it really gets interesting because now it's like an old West movie and the two gunfighters are in the street and it's Houston and Dallas and who's going to blink? Because you've put yourself in a position now where you almost have to get Romo because there's nobody in the draft. You've got a team that has, you know, and you lose Bouye to a defense that is really a Super Bowl caliber defense in a lot of ways. And you put yourself now behind the eight ball again where you almost have to have Romo. What are you going to do if you don't get Romo? What then? Cutman? I mean, there's not Kaepernick. There's not a lot. There's not a list of guys out there.
No.
So Jerry sees that, and so what's he going to do? He's a businessman. He knows he's got an asset. He's going to hold on to that asset as long as he can, and they're both going to sit there and look at each other and wait for the other one to blink.
And it could be a while before anyone blinks, Jeff, because Romo technically is not going to be financially on the hook to the Dallas Cowboys until April when the off-season workouts start, and only then would he be on the hook to be paid by Dallas if he suffered a serious injury, say if he was weightlifting in the team facility, and then they'd be on the hook for his salary. So this could go a couple more weeks with Jerry saying, well, there's no rush.
You're right. But here's what I think the Cowboys will do if it gets into April, Neil. I think they'll just tell him, stay away. Just stay away.
Right.
So that they're not on the hook. You know what I'm saying? This is going to be really interesting before it gets done, I think.
Do you think Cleveland are still in for Jimmy Garoppolo? I mean, do you think any of that is ever real? I mean, we don't know whether Garoppolo... we just don't know, do we, what the Patriots are thinking? We know they like him, so maybe all this trade talk is just speculation from us in the media because Belichick has no plan to get rid of him. But then the other way to look at it is Garoppolo's price is probably never going to be higher than it is right now.
Well, I think, Neil, I think it's obviously more than just up talking about it in the media because they've got to be trying to find a way, not just Cleveland, but a number of teams have got to, because of the supply and demand economics that we talk about all the time, right? But you're in New England again, now you're in control. You're in the catbird seat because you got a guy that doesn't cost you very much. He's a quality backup. You're not up against the cap. You don't need to go out and upgrade your team in other areas, so you need to make this trade. You make the trade if it's beneficial for you, and if it's not in your mind beneficial for you, and I'm talking about major beneficial for you, then you sit on and keep your asset because he's of value. And, you know, again, it's like you don't discard in poker unless you think you can get better cards.
Jeff, we talked about keep your asset a few times, and I think we saw what's happened to Green Bay and Dallas, and they've lost some players. And, you know, we said about Cleveland re-signing Joel Bitonio. Houston have got to replace a couple of defenders in John Simon and AJ Bouye. Miami actually very quietly did quite well, Jeff. You know, I followed this on the couple of days before the free agency period began and when it started. They re-signed Kenny Stills at wide receiver, that deep threat who can stretch the field for them. They extended the contract of safety Rashard Jones by 5 years. And again, that was a move that they'd promised to make to him when he got hurt, and they backed that up. And they re-signed Andre Branch, who gave him a little bit of pass rush at the end of last season. So I guess we don't pay as much attention to teams that do that, but, you know, actually re-signing your own can be as good a free agent move as going out and picking somebody off the street.
Sometimes better, and in my mind, most times better, because you know what you're getting. You don't know. I mean, you can evaluate the player, you can talk to people on the team. You can, I mean, and they do all that background work in both in the draft and in free agency. But until that guy comes in, and until you're coaching him, and until you got him on the field, in the locker room, facing the adversity you face during the season, all of those kinds of things, you really don't know what you're getting. Mm. And so when you have one that you've raised up, like the safety, and I thought that was a big, big signing for the Dolphins to do that. And now you can mix in a guy like Timmons who's going to bring some veteran presence. Yeah, maybe he's not as fast as he was once upon a time, but he's going to bring some veteran presence. He's going to bring some leadership, and he's going to bring some toughness to your defense, which you need. Then I think those are good moves. I thought they were low-key, but I thought they were very, very, very – you can see Gase's plan. And you know, I talked about this on Twitter. It's when you see a place that has a plan and works the plan, then you recognize that that's a team that's got a chance. I thought San Francisco was one of those teams.
Yes. Yeah. San Francisco, to me, Jeff, were exactly and just going back to Miami, Adam Gase talked about whenever they sign a player to a long-term deal or they bring someone new into their building, he is looking for the intangibles. And that made me think about that connection to the Patriots and what he learned from Josh McDaniels. And he actually said last year he wants Miami to become like the New England Patriots. The intangibles are so important to New England, and I think it's going to be the same way for Miami. And then looking at San Francisco, Jeff, and I went back to an interview I heard from John Lynch, who was saying, you know, when you're eating a big steak, you can only do it one bite at a time. And they haven't gone massive headline. You could say, okay, they paid a lot of money for Kyle Juszczyk, who's a fullback. But if you want a fullback in your offense, which they do, you might as well go and get the best one in the business, which they have. And then they add Pierre Garçon. And I don't know, every move made them slightly better without rocking anyone's world.
Yeah, I mean, Aldrick Robinson's a perfect example. Why is that a good sign? Because he's a vertical guy who's proven he can make plays in the league, and Shanahan knows exactly what he's getting when you get him, right? Aldrick is not without holes, right? But you know what the holes are, and they're the holes that you can live with. That's so, like I said, that's what made me say that I think that you saw evidence of a plan in San Francisco, and they're working their plan. See, if you will go back to assets again, you know, and I'm going to say it this way. If you don't manage your assets well, you can guarantee you're going to get your asset kicked next season. That's just the way it is, because it's a talent-driven league, and you got to make sure that you maximize what you have.
Absolutely. Let's
look at look at what they've done, and now look at what's available in the draft at the positions that they need. That's the part of this that's the unspoken part that we'll continue to dig through as we get closer to draft.
Yeah, just part of free agency is just a piece of the puzzle. Let's take some questions from the mailbag. First one comes from Connor Bennett, who says, where is the most natural place for Malcolm Butler to go with that team being somebody who doesn't mind losing their first round draft pick? I would not be surprised, Jeff, if Malcolm Butler was touted as being part of the Brandon Cooks deal. Sean Payton has said, we had to give up some assets on offense to get better on defense. Butler is, by all accounts, him and the Patriots just don't see eye to eye on what his long-term value is to them. And maybe that's because he was a free agent off the street and then Belichick's, you know, squeezed a Super Bowl win out of him and another one after the heroics against Seattle. Maybe Belichick's ready to move on, but I wouldn't be surprised if New Orleans got back in the mix for Malcolm Butler. What do you think?
Well, I think that makes sense because that's an area of real need for them. It's kind of a tough one for me because I got emotional ties all over it because, you know, Delvin Bro is a really, really fine young corner. Now, the guy that they played on the other side of Delvin last year, Sterling Moore, is one of our SMU kids. Mm. Sterling's a great kid and a good NFL player, but he's not Malcolm Butler. So that would be a place where that would be a serious upgrade for their defense. And let's face it, if the Saints are going to do anything, they've got to get better on defense. They don't tackle well. They don't cover well. They got a lot of holes in that defense and a lot of holes that they need to fill. Mm. So You know, again, you got to fill him where you can fill him, and I would not be surprised if that doesn't. I agree with you that that could be a landing spot for him.
Yeah, I think the Saints feel they can get by with Drew Brees at quarterback and whoever it is, and Michael Thomas emerged at wide receiver, but obviously that defense needs upgrading. Let's take this question from let's go with this one from Andy. He says, it's Andy, his Twitter handle is Andy Giddo Sunday. He says, if you were the Minnesota Vikings, would you have kept Cordarrelle Patterson? So Patterson went to the Raiders overnight, Jeff, and I guess the Vikings have got Adam Thielen that they want to keep developing at wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, and of course Laquon Treadwell didn't even see the field really as a rookie. Patterson is a nice weapon, but did the Vikings, did they kind of just let him creep out of town, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the reality of it is, and we talk, this is amazing. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like we're going to say, I told you so, but I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we were doing the draft and he was coming out of Tennessee and we said, here's a kid that is a JUCO player, so he really hasn't played much college football. He's underdeveloped as a wide receiver. He's raw. He's a great kick returner. But he's really raw as a wide receiver, has a long, long way to go to be a finished wide receiver. Well, here we are now, what, 3 years into his NFL career?
Four years in, yeah.
Still saying the same.
Yeah,
we're still saying the same things about it. He's a great kickoff returner, and that's about it. He's a little bit Teddy Ginn, you know what I'm saying? He's got that vertical speed, but in terms of being a finished, polished receiver,
no, I saw that immaturity firsthand, Jeff, when I was out in Minnesota and I interviewed him. I saw players on the practice field who wanted to chase him down and punch him in the face. And I was sat with you that time when we were in the studio and they were losing 34-7 to Seattle. They were 34-0 down at the time. He returns a kickoff for a touchdown and he's dancing all the way off the field. And I was just like, that guy's not for, that's not the guy I want on my team.
Yeah, and that's again why, as we get into, you know, all of this, whether it's free agency or the draft, there's so much more to it. That you're not, and I say this all a lot of times, and sometimes people think it's like you're collecting football cards. Mm. It isn't like that, right? There's a lot that goes into it. And the immaturity, the lack of professionalism, all of those things, you know, those are the guys, let him go. Let him go. Let him go to somebody else. Now, he may turn it on in Oakland, but my guess is what he will be is what he will be, because very rarely does a leopard change its spots.
One more question, Jeff, and it goes back to the Brock Osweiler trade. This is a good one. Comes from Michael Bennett, who says, with an ever-increasing salary cap, will we see more trades like the Osweiler one, or will the league step in to stamp it out? Do you think the league will ever mandate that the player you trade for has to at least have a shot to make your roster? Or is it, if you're sticking to the league rules, I mean, the Browns didn't break any league rules. We should be very clear about that. The Browns did everything that was by the books. Everything has to be signed off by the league. But again, it's that kind of, it's using cash to buy draft picks, essentially. Do you think we'll see more of it now? I mean, this is a copycat league. Or do you think the NFL, sometimes they wait and see something develop, Jeff, and it makes headlines, then they can change the rules?
Well, you know what? To me, I don't know why you would do that. Mm. Why would you mandate that a guy has to? I mean, that's like saying, you know, if you draft a guy in the first three rounds, he's got to make your team.
Right.
That's
yeah.
not. I mean, I don't think the NFL has any business telling the teams what they can do with their players and any business with what they can do with how they get rid of players or get players, as long as they stay inside the rules, which Cleveland clearly did. What Cleveland did was they took non-NFL thinking and applied it to the NFL. This is something that's been done in the NBA numbers of times. Mm. You know, they're applying outside, and I think that's good. I think that's progressive, and I think that's good for them, for the National Football League.
Jeff, we're just wrapping up. Give me a winner and loser of free agency. I wrote this piece up for Sky Sports yesterday. One of my winners was the Cleveland Browns. One of my losers was Brock Osweiler, because he's basically a piece of meat. He was a pawn in the Browns roster building game, and nobody knows what's going to happen with Brock Osweiler. Do you have a winner and loser from free agency? Something you really liked or team you really liked and the team you didn't like?
The first thing I want to say to you, Neil, is don't, you know, we don't have to send a sympathy card to
no.
Mark Osweiler.
No, he's got plenty of money.
He's got 16 million reasons to be happy.
You are correct, my friend. What was it Kevin always used to tell us? Kevin Cade always used to tell me and you, never feel sorry for a millionaire.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know what? I got to say that I think New England, obviously,
yep.
had a great free agency period. I really thought that Houston's put themselves in a really precarious position. It could be great if they're able to get Tony Romo and mm-hmm. he plays and they go to the playoffs, or it could be an F if they can't get a quarterback. Now you have nothing at that position, and you've lost your best corner, and you've lost a quality linebacker in Simon. So they and Carolina, to me, are two that I just didn't feel like they had a good free agency period.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. We could have done a three-hour one of these today because we have so much still to talk about next week, and we'll do it on Inside the Huddle because Dante Hightower is still out there. Adrian Peterson, Jay Cutler, Darrell Revis. There are big names to be had and lots of players still on the market, and we'll return with our state of the franchise as well. Jeff, until next week, when I still don't think you or I will have been signed, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.